paper.
Welcome to episode 80 of Paper Talk, a series of podcast interviews featuring artists and professionals who are working in the fields of hand papermaking and paper art. I'm Helen Hebert, and I run Helen Hebert Studio, a hand papermaking studio in Colorado's Rocky Mountains, where I create artist books and installations. I also host the annual Red Cliff Paper Retreat and papermaking masterclasses here in the studio, and I teach online classes about paper, light, and books, too. Find out more at HelenHebertStudio.com. Today, I'm talking with peace activist, educator, and origami artist Miri Golan, who hopes to use her installations as a catalyst to unite people of different religious and cultural backgrounds. Golan is founder of the Israeli Origami Center and Folding Together, an organization that encourages Israeli and Palestinian children and adults to fold paper forms as a team, turning origami into a collaborative expression of hope for a more peaceful world. She also designed and developed a mathematics curriculum called Origametria that has been accepted into curriculum by the Israeli Ministry of Education, in which children learn geometry principles by folding origami models. Enjoy our conversation. Well, Miri Golan, it's so lovely to have you on Paper Talk. Welcome.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, so you're in Israel, and I want to hear a little bit about your childhood and any influences that led you to discover origami.
I born in Jerusalem, grew up in Jerusalem.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in my time was no any internet or anything. So when I was about six, I saw on the TV, the TV was black and white.
Mm-hmm.
I saw some Japanese who teach how to make the crane. And I just took a piece of paper and start to fold it. I didn't know it's origami. I used to call it playing with the paper.
Uh-huh.
So I used to play with the paper a lot when I was a student in the class. I felt it helped me to concentrate. So this is how I did it until I grew up. Then when I grew up, I understood that it's a Japanese art. And then I went to Japan. And I went to the Japanese, I went to Japan in 88. And I went to the tourist information, was no internet at the time.
Right.
And I asked, do you have any origami organization? And they say, no, but we have Shiatsu organization if you want. And I said, no, but there was a too big organization in Japan, but I didn't know.
Right.
So I start to dig in a book store and meet the Japanese friend and learn about the origami from the culture side.
Uh-huh.
And I was sitting hours and hours with Japanese book, you know, so many folding and all this. This is how I discovered that.
So how old were you when you went to Japan?
I was about 24.
Okay.
And after I did my army, after I studied, then I went to Japan because I started to understand there is a Japanese art. But in Israel, at the time, was no books or, you know, was no internet. That you can today, if you're interested in something, you just go and start to look at it, go to Google or whatever. But that time, people don't understand it, but that time was no access to something you like.
Right.
You need to really dig. Like the best place to do is to go to a bookshop.
Yeah.
And start to look for a book and another book and discover that.
Right.
So this is how I start. Yeah.
And so you went to Japan intentionally to learn about origami.
Yeah, I left Israel from 88 to 92.
Okay.
I've been to Japan, but then I went after to India and I spent, I've been traveling in the Himalaya in 5,000, 6,000 feet.
Mm.
And every time I met children, I used to teach them origami. I studied education before I went to Japan.
Okay, I was wondering about that. Yeah.
Yeah, I studied education, and every time I used to go to some village in India, in Philippines, when I've been traveling, I've traveled just to meet the other culture and to, you know, give something to myself.
Yeah.
So I brought from Japan a lot of papers and books, and this is how I teach. I teach in India, I teach in Australia, I teach in Philippines. Just for fun, I used to come to a village and just give the children paper and fold. And I think
it's like a language. You're using origami as your language
always,
because you can speak all of those languages.
Exactly.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
You know, when you teach somebody origami, and when you teach him, he gets stressed usually because he thinks, did I succeed or not? Yeah.
Uh-huh.
But he said to himself, and eventually when he got the result, you see kind of a smile on the person that is
yes.
so beautiful. Now, when I teach, I know he's going to succeed.
Right.
And I know it will be beautiful for him. He doesn't know. The other side
right.
doesn't know.
Right.
So I like to see this, what's happened to people when you come to teach them. Actually, if you come to adult to teach, they always say to you, oh, my hand is left hand. I'm not creative. You know,
yeah.
a lot of, I think that it's a wrong conception.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Wrong, what they say, because it's amazing when you succeed with something, you forget it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you fail in something or you have a difficulty,
mm-hmm.
you always remember that.
Right.
Interesting, huh?
Yeah, it is interesting. Yeah, I've been thinking a lot about
succeed,
yeah.
Can
yeah.
you remember, if you think about step of your life and something you didn't succeed, it stay there.
Yeah.
Very important knowledge.
Yes, absolutely. Wow. Okay, so you were traveling for how many years? Sounds like 3 years. And
yeah,
then
3 years. I felt like I study, and actually in very early age, I got a job as a manager in some education organization. So when I left Israel, you know, I served the army. I've been 2 years in the army.
And that's a mandatory? Everyone
yes,
does
yes,
that?
Yes.
yes.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm.
So when I left Israel, I want just to pass the day with no obligation to anybody, to anywhere. I was young and I have no obligation.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to feel it, because from very early age, I was volunteer. I did a lot of things from very early age. So I want to be free.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a gift I give to myself, because I learned about a lot of, if you don't go out from your own culture, you know, people today, it's sad to be to say that people today keep to their own kind. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The world is been very open and now it's closed.
Yeah,
like people try to keep to their own kind. I see it now. And I remember when I, you know, visit other culture, I learn more about my culture.
Yes, yes.
So you learn a lot about yourself when you see other culture and you learn other culture. I hope people move back to open mind and kind of for other culture, because it gives you a very wide window to the world and to yourself.
Yes, and I'm really interested in talking to you about the work that you've done related to this. I spent a year in Germany when I was in high school, and again in college. And yeah, just like you say, it opened my eyes. I had to struggle not speaking the language. It's very humbling. It makes you see how other people live and appreciate the world and realize all the similarities that we have and differences too. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So I think, so you say 1988. So pretty soon after that, you must have found a network of origami people, because I think you met Paul. And
even in Japan, when I was traveling and when I've been to Japan, I didn't meet origami people, but I met the Japanese people that origami was part of the culture.
Mm.
Yeah. So, I did one of my favorite book was a Yamaguchi book. Later I get to know the person, yeah. But I loved his book, and I used to really always model. It was a model first I teach to others, and I think that I didn't know other people. I didn't know there is the whole world of origami. I didn't know.
Right.
I think it was a sad in a way, but it was good because it let me to open my own channel to the origami.
Yeah, I hear you.
I met Paul and the whole world of origami, and I realized what I did. This is the moment that when I met Paul and I learned about the origami world, I thought, you know, it's, you know, I learned what I did without knowing.
Yes, I really appreciate you saying that. I feel like actually in my own family, my family doesn't talk very much. So I had to learn a lot about the world on my own because we weren't a family that discussed politics and you know, things. But then also in paper, I think we're similar age, maybe you're a few years older than me, but I started out on my own too, and then just gradually met people. And then, oh, I met this person whose book I was using years ago. Yeah. And yeah, it's a really nice, yeah, before the internet too, there's something magical. Yeah. Okay. So did you come back to Israel and start the Origami Center before you met Paul? Actually, or yeah, how did that all?
Yeah, I did it before I met Paul. In 1992, I come back to Israel. And I thought, okay what I'm doing now? Mm-hmm. Actually, it was very hard to back to here because suddenly people looked to me, the mentality looked to me very hard and different. And I need to kind of find myself. But then I asked what I like to do. I like education and I like origami.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, let's connect them together because I do remember the memories when I was a child and I was playing with the paper that it's relaxed me and helped me to concentrate.
Right.
So I thought, okay, maybe I sit and write some syllabus of how it can work and how it will be. So I was sitting and writing very deep syllabus about how the origami can develop learning skill. And then I went to many schools.
Uh-huh.
And they all kicked me out. They said, this is not good. You can go to the community center, give them origami class. This is not for education.
Uh-huh.
So I went from a city council to a city council and everybody say, no. And then I went to, you know, Tel Aviv is an amazing place. I like Tel Aviv because in Tel Aviv, you always find open mind people. Mm. And so everything that I start new many times, I start in Tel Aviv. So I met some amazing guy that he looked at me after I give him half an hour lecture about origami as a learning tool. He looked at me and smiled and say, I give you a job so you have money to buy in the grocery and rent apartment and live here in Tel Aviv. And then he gave me a job in two schools.
Uh-huh.
And one of them was a special education school. Children was intelligent, average and up, but have a lot of emotional and learning problem.
Mm-hmm.
The other school was an art school.
Oh.
It was kind of a two edges.
Yeah.
In a special education school, I stayed there for 20 years.
Oh, wow.
I teached there for 20 years.
Uh-huh.
Then I worked there and I start working other places and people get to know me. And then suddenly I remember then I said, too many people want me to teach, but I don't have enough time.
Right.
So one of my friends said, why you don't train teacher to teach? And I said, nobody can teach better than me. So I learned that people can teach a lot better than me. That's okay. I grow up.
Yeah.
And I start to train teachers. And then I start to develop the Origami Center. Now, that time in Israel, people didn't know what is origami.
Right.
So I thought, and sometime I used to teach in some community centers, a big workshop. And people say, I don't want to do origami. I have some book, it was complicated. And
mm-hmm.
I thought, maybe I should write some origami book.
Mm-hmm.
So when people, it'd be easy for people, because people all the time tell me they cannot make it.
Mm-hmm.
So I did wrote a first origami booklet, and I print it, and I prepare it and graphic design and build it up. And then when I came to the printer, I didn't have money to pay to the printer.
Uh-huh.
So the printer started to tell me, oh, we be partner. I take 80%, you take 20. Uh-huh. So I came to my father and I told him, and he said, you know, I pay the printer.
Okay,
so I did the first booklet and I got very, very excited. So I went to one of the big hobby shop in Israel. And I asked him, David, can you look at it and tell me if this is can be sell?
Mm-hmm.
Look at that and say, can you give me 200 copy of this?
Uh-huh.
This is, was my first sell, 200 copy.
So how many did you print the first time?
2,000.
Okay.
Yeah, so I gave him 200, was my first sell. Mm-hmm. And remember, I sleep with the booklet under my pillow. I got very excited.
Yeah.
But you know, my mother is very disappointed until today. Why? Because when I was a child and they asked me, what do you want to do when you grow up? I used to say a book writer.
Uh-huh.
Because I spent half of my time in the library.
Uh-huh.
My mother disappointment for her origami book, it's not a book, it's like I haven't write my book yet. It doesn't matter how many book I make, you know.
Right.
No, you need to write a story. But I was very happy and pleasant. And I remember after book I gave it number. I did number 2 and 3, and I've been to some fair and I put the book. And some lady ran to the stage, to the spot and say, I love this booklet. You know, this is amazing. Everything Miri Golan does, I really like. And the first time I start to see what people feel.
Yeah.
I used to write on my book, when you buy this book, you help me to make the next book.
Uh-huh.
Some people send me by envelope the time.
Uh-huh.
Send me money, say, mm-hmm. I buy ahead your book because I want you to do the next book.
Oh,
no, it was very nice because I kind of feel like I'm alone. That time mm-hmm. I didn't know the origami world, and I kind of did it to people, and people discovered the origami and I see the fun of the origami, and I start to build it up and start to build the community, and it was really a nice kind of a beautiful discovery for me, because I just have something inside me. You know, when you have a vision of something, mm-hmm. I have a vision inside me that this is, you know, like kind of you discover that. It was quite excitement if I think about it now, but that time I all the time thinking how I do it, how I make it better, and I just right. kind of want to give people what origami give me.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And these were in Hebrew?
So
they're probably the only origami books in
actually,
at the time, or were there others that were?
It was translated a Harbin book.
Okay.
You know, the 3 Harbin book to Hebrew.
Okay.
But it was very, very difficult. Most of the people could not make it. So
right.
many people who buy this book cannot make it. So it's feel like origami was kind of a niche to very, very intelligent, very complicated people.
Yeah.
Rarely people can make it. So what origami booklet we did, it's just open up a lot of people to the origami, and people can see that everybody can do origami. It's a fun. It's
yeah. So yeah, I think that was common back then. The first books that I found, well, you see the picture and you see, oh, I want to make that. And you pick the really hard one because you don't know.
Yeah.
You have to learn the basic folds first.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
then you get frustrated. Yeah.
It's happened to most of the people. But I think since I make my booklet, and then when I married Paul, the first 5 years, he didn't do any new book and I didn't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
I did, before I met Paul, 8 booklets. But when we met each other for 5 years, we didn't print anything. And then after 5 years, we start to print book together, and he did his own book. And so the book we sell in Israel, the mostly book is a book we do. And I feel like the book we're selling, it still gives kind of a base to many, many people.
Yeah, you have to start somewhere. And you keep referring to Paul. I just want to say Mary is married to Paul Jackson, who I had on the show recently as well. So tell me, how was that? Did you meet him at the first big origami event you went to, or?
Okay. I have one of the people who worked with me from the beginning is called Gil Givoni. He went to knock on my door and say, I like origami and I want to develop my hobby. And actually, together with him, we try to discover the origami. Gil now live in Holland, but he was kind of helping me. And then we got some email from Germany, from some guy from Germany, Edward Meyer, and he say, I'm in Israel in this and this date. Can I meet you? I'm doing origami. Uh-huh. Oh, yeah, of course. And then he told me before I met Paul, he told me about the origami world, and I was shocked. What? There's a whole world of origami, and I don't know anything about it.
Yeah.
So he invited me and said, why don't come to the Italian convention?
Mm-hmm.
There's origami convention. And I never forget my feeling when I came to the Italian convention and I stood in the hall of so many people like me who just sitting and folding, folding, fold. And I was just looking at it and I couldn't believe this was existing. I didn't know about it.
Yeah, right.
And it was amazing. It's like I find my family, a community.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not just me who know and try to show and I need to discover. Suddenly the whole world of community, it was amazing. I went to the convention, come back to Israel, feeling really high. And then it was another convention in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
So I never forget that I came to Germany and Edward say, you know, now we're going to meet a very big artist, Paul Jackson. I said, who is Paul Jackson? and I met him, and I think what connect me and Paul that we come from the same point to the origami. You know, it wasn't, both of us wasn't just sitting and fold very complicated model and do how complicated you do, and just to see the wide of the creative side of it.
Mm-hmm.
So we find ourselves speaking for hours and hours in the convention.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I never thought about relationship because all my head was all the time about working. You know, I'm a workaholic. You know, I never find interesting what other women like and do, and you know, just give me book and paper. And
yeah.
So I wasn't thinking about it too much, but suddenly it started to develop between us and I felt uh-huh. comfortable with him.
Uh-huh.
So it was really, this is where I met Paul. And
what year was that? What year?
We met in 99, the end of 99, something like that.
Okay.
The end of 2000, we got married. We met 5 months after we got married.
Uh-huh. You met 5 months before you got married and 5 months after you got married. Yes, got it.
Yeah, I think, yes, about 2000. I think 2000 we met.
Wow.
Now you decide me. But don't remember.
Well, I guess when you live so far apart, you have to, try it or not. Yeah.
Sometimes I'm amazed because he born in England, in Yorkshire. Mm-hmm. I born in Jerusalem.
Yeah.
Two different culture.
Mm-hmm.
And our world is really well connected. You know, we live together and we have the whole world together. And, you know, it's life more interesting with Paul around, you know.
Yeah.
So it's the life is amazing, you know.
Yes.
Everything come together.
It is amazing. Yeah. Okay, so you already had the origami center. You were teaching other teachers how to teach, and they were going into schools, and this center is still around, right?
Oh, of course.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, actually, I did. And I also, from the beginning of my work, I worked with Palestinians. I grew up in Jerusalem.
Right.
Jerusalem, that time, was a different Jerusalem from today. I think the Jerusalem, you have East Jerusalem and West Jerusalem, okay? Mm-hmm. So when I grew up, was kind of East and West was melting to each other. Now they are very separate. Mm-hmm. You really separate a big wall. And so people doesn't know each other. But I remember part of my childhood is the Arab community and the Palestinian community. So this is look to me normal. When I developed origamis here, I say, origami is belong to the whole culture. So anybody invite me, I teach. So I did start to work with Palestinian before I met Paul,
mm-hmm.
Folding together. But that time I didn't call it folding together. I have a Japanese monk who came to Israel, Horikoshi,
mm-hmm.
Who come to live between Palestinian and kind of a balance between Israeli and Palestinian. And we did a lot of projects together. We went to a Palestinian area together and teach Palestinian kids.
Mm-hmm.
So we did this folding. I also trained students from Birzeit University to be origami teacher. And when I met Paul, I was in the middle of this training. And Paul even came and teach them. This is when one of the first Paul visit to Israel. I took mm-hmm. him with me to Ramallah mm-hmm. to teach.
Did you ever have any difficulty yourself, like offering the classes, or was that always just accepted? I mean, this is a beautiful project, listeners. Folding Together, we'll put it the link. I think it's no longer going on, but the idea is that Palestinian. The children from both sides are folding together and getting to know each other through origami, which is what you were doing all along.
I think when I started, I went to Ramallah.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody introduced me to a student from Birzeit. And that time, before I met Paul, I was single. I went to Ramallah. And I needed to convince the student
mm-hmm.
to make origami course for the to train them to become origami teacher. And I remember I went there and I was by myself, you know, with a guy who invited me, and they all was guy in the room. And I said to them, look, I can train the Palestinian student to become origami teacher. They can go to the village and teach. And we can mix between Israeli teacher and Palestinian teacher. So they look at me and say, okay, we will think about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought to think about it, it's me no.
Yeah, right.
So I say, okay, if a man and woman meet each other first time, and when they meet, the guy say, you know, I don't like this and I like that. And she say, I like that and don't like. When each one of them go home, say, oh, maybe she's too fanatic on that. Maybe, she, you know, start to think bad about each other. But if the first time will be romantic music and candle, a nice meal, they go home and say, oh, it was so lovely.
Mm-hmm.
So can you imagine the origami? It's the romantic meal.
Mm-hmm.
And immediately you say, okay, we take it.
Yeah.
I think about it, I was really brave to say that when the whole
so you said died, that to them. Yeah.
I said it to them.
Okay.
I was spontaneous, you know.
Yeah.
I want to convince them. I didn't want to go because they said to me no.
Right.
And I remember that I said it to them and they said immediately yes and become a friend, you know.
Mm.
I remember once I drive with them to, it was a conference to ILO, and it was me and them in the car, and they say to me, what happened if they stop me, the police or the army stop us or something? So I said, no problem. I will say that you kidnapped me. You know, I make a joke all the time.
Yeah.
So they and every time they try to talk to me about the politics opinion,
mm-hmm.
I say, look, I don't understand anything about it. Mm. You know, I'm an artist. I'm mm-hmm. a origami artist. Mm-hmm. I have no clue what is right, what is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Really, I don't understand. And many times they try to push me to understand what I really think. And I said, but I don't know. I have no clue. I didn't come with a left flag or right flag or say, right. I think this is, and I still don't have any flag. People doesn't understand it. The thing, I work with Palestinians because I'm a left wing. I'm not left wing. I'm not right wing. I'm not a center. I do believe that you need to get to know the person.
Yes.
You can be Israeli and you can be a nice person. You can be Israeli. You can be a bad person. You can be Palestinian, nice right. person, bad person. I want to be your friend if mm-hmm. you are a good person.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not a good person, it doesn't matter which culture you are. So I think what's happened now, people kind of diagnose each other and separate them, but they believe, and it's wrong because, mm-hmm. You know, I have a Palestinian friend who partner who worked with me, Niveen. She worked with me for 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
No, her daughter was just born. My son was a baby. And now, you know, we're still working together. And
yeah.
every time there is a crisis, I always say to her, now when the corona start and all the hours cut, I said to her, Niveen, you know, it's like a big wave going above our head. We stand here, the waves go over, and then we continue to do our work. And now when we start to back to work, I said, I remember the way. So I think it's the relationship you build with other people. This is the most yeah. important. And people mixed up. Many mm-hmm. of the people who hate somebody, they never met.
Right, right. You
know? Now, the media is a big problem.
Yes.
Every time I did some project and I invite the media, they want to hear blood story.
Mm.
If they don't hear blood story, they don't come.
Mm-hmm.
So you understand all the information people get, it's from the media.
Right.
When people get information from the media, they think, you know, if you, many of them think, you know, my son teach me something very nice when he was about 4th grade.
Uh-huh.
So we have discussion in the class about Israeli and Palestinian. And he said, only me and one of the kids in the class was positive about Palestinian. But you know why, mommy? And I said, why? Because you work with Palestinian and his father play music with his Palestinian.
Mm-hmm.
So we both know the other side, but all the other side class who was against, they never met.
Yeah.
And I think when my son said that he was about 9, I look at him and I thought, I wish so many people understand that, you know?
Yeah, that's wonderful. Yeah, I grew up in the South in America, and my mother was very interested in all cultures and all kinds of people. And she intentionally took me with her when she volunteered at a daycare with Black children and just made sure that I was comfortable around other people. And I think it's so important. As children. So that's why Folding Together is so wonderful, because when you're a child, and then you just said that about your son, your experience is how you view the world. So if you have friends that are Palestinian or Black, you're comfortable. And
I think, it's what we show to our children.
Mm-hmm.
Children, you know, we have right. what we say to our children,
right.
what we do.
Right.
The children pick up what we do, not what we say. Yeah.
Right. Right.
You say whatever.
Yeah,
you
that's
want,
right. That's right.
Pick up what you do. So
yeah.
I think I always say to parents, you have chance to give your knowledge to your kids until he's 8. Uh-huh. After that, it's gone.
Yeah.
Whatever,
yeah.
You know, sometimes parents give up or say, oh, he's too young. Never mind, never mind. They pay for that later.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
Hey, listeners, let's take a little break here, and I want to tell you about The Paper Year, my online membership program. It's an annual subscription club, kind of like a year-long online class, featuring a new paper project every month. Get inspired with video and written project instructions designed to spark ideas that keep you creating for the rest of the month. Explore creative paper techniques, including origami, pop-ups, paper weaving, book arts, paper cutting, and more. And join our growing community of paper lovers online to learn and share in a warm, encouraging, supportive, creative community. Visit HelenHebertStudio.com to find out more and hold your spot. Registration opens 4 times a year.
Okay, well, now I want to talk a little bit about your other program, Origometria. How do you say it?
Origometria.
Okay. So this is
combined with origami and geometry.
Right. And you have this program that you've developed that is part of the school system now.
Yeah. Right? Yes. I remember I told you that the first program I developed, it's origami to develop learning skill.
Right.
And then when I met, I always know there is some geometry teaching there, but I have no courage to start with them until I met Paul.
Uh-huh.
Paul doesn't say that, but I think his mathematics in a very, very, very high level.
Mm-hmm.
So we were sitting together and start to think how we turn it to geometry and origami. And we developed until I met Paul, we was teaching in about 75 schools,
mm-hmm,
as an extra lesson in schools.
Okay.
And I told you that I was a teacher in one of the special education schools.
Right.
And I worked with Dr. Dina Vardi. She was a principal in this school that I learned a lot from her.
Mm-hmm.
And she says something very interesting. She say, if you teach the kids some dinosaur from origami, very complicated, very nice, is this one going to change his self-image about himself? Because children who doesn't succeed from early age, they have a bad self-image about themselves. Mm-hmm. This is part of the problem. And this is a question that I work with it quite a lot of time. Is what I do with the children there, they make a beautiful origami object, is it change them the self-image? Do the parents see them different? Because mm-hmm, if you have a child, when you're born, you have a lot of beautiful dream,
right,
what's going to happen? Then when you start to study, you see a lot of problem and you get disappointment. So you got the kind of a self, kind of not great image about him and about, you know, you don't know how to take it.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's, you know, the kid's ability is amazing. All the kids' ability, I do believe. But sometimes the problem that you teach them something too early, or maybe mm-hmm, they're not ready to study something, and then you see a problem. So when I was working with this question, I was thinking, you know what? No. If I teach him amazing origami, it doesn't change what you think about himself. Because the society diagnosed you how you are good in maths. If you're good in maths, you're a very good student. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, he's good in art and football.
Mm-hmm.
It means he's not great.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, children are not stupid. They know what they think about.
Right,
yeah?
Right.
So I start to think, if I could give to the children something extra who can change what they think about themselves and change how the people around think about them. And if I can have the ability that when the maths teacher go to the class, the kids say, yeah, we're doing math.
Yeah.
Because usually the children say, oh, it's math, you know, geometry.
Right,
you know?
Right.
So this is what I really want to change.
Mm-hmm.
And So we start to build a lesson, how we can teach geometry with origami. So we put to our team, Dr. Johnny Obermann. Johnny Obermann, he is one of the most amazing person I ever met. He's really a precious person. He's today 83. He is one of the leader of mathematics education in Israel.
Okay.
He write the curriculum. And he worked with us to develop the lesson. He have a lot of knowledge how children understand geometry, what is the problem. He doesn't look too high.
Right.
He look down the eyes of the children.
Mm-hmm.
So I think when me, Paul, and Johnny met, it was kind of like, you know, like a puzzle that it's
going
to fit. So everything just fit to each other. Until now, I heard a maths teacher work with our program say, this is amazing program. It's amazing what he does to me as a maths teacher. It's amazing what he does to the children. And you know what? Most of the children who really get crazy about it is the children with the difficulty. Usually participate and doesn't have difficulty. In other hand, the strong children in the class cannot go forward because the teacher have the control when she fold with them, ask geometry question, they diagnose that. And so there is some working together with the class. Suddenly the strong and the weak have the same level.
Ah.
So it's kind of give to everybody the same starting point.
Right.
And there is a college here in Israel. They took the program and did some research without us. We have no connection to this research. And they took as a criticized group as a strong student. And the weak student was the testing group. And they saw in a very, very short time, the weak student have the same achievement as the strong student. So it's mean, especially now after Corona, the problem in the Corona, that the parents who have money and ability, they pay and the children go forward.
Right.
But most of the children who come from a weak population, they didn't study at all. The Zoom is nothing. They didn't study.
Yeah.
Sometimes they need to look after the young children in the family. They didn't study. So there is a big gap between the weak and the strong. Like if before was a gap, the gap become very big.
Yeah.
And now the challenge of the education system, how to merge the gap between the strong and the weak student. And Orica Metra does it. Amazing. They did this test before the Corona.
Yeah.
But now this test become very relevant because it show how it's reduced the gap between strong and weak.
Right, right. So tell me how does the program work in the actual school?
So in the beginning, I used to train teacher and the teacher go to the school. We're still doing this. But then I thought, what's happened if the math teacher will do it? But how she can do it? She's not an origami person. She have no time to sit and study origami. She's busy, you know, teacher working very, very hard. They have no time. So I went to Singapore. I participated in OSME. It's an origami science and maths conference.
Okay.
It's every 4 years, very important. And I teach there in Singapore. I teach teacher and student. And then I start to teach and they got very excited and they ask me, Miri, do you think you can work without teacher? Maybe you come to Singapore many times. And my son that time was 2 years old, though. He was young, 3 years old.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to leave him.
Yeah.
You know, I left for 2 weeks. And I come back, I thought, it's okay, it's okay. And then half a year after, he sit with me in the car and he said, Mommy, do you remember that when you went abroad? And I say, yes. He say, do you know you broke my heart?
Uh-huh.
I didn't want to leave. Right. I didn't want to leave him. So yeah. I thought, I'm not leaving him. So how can I teach from distance without leaving him?
Mm-hmm.
And I started to think, maybe we do something online.
Mm-hmm.
This is, was 2012.
Okay.
So I start to develop, and nobody understand what I want. The truth, today when you say orgometria, people understand. But at that time, nobody understand. And I see it in my eyes. And I try to explain to how to build it. And nobody understood that. And then one day I renovate my kitchen. And I look at the catalog. It was a very dynamic, amazing catalog. And I thought, who created this catalog? And I look at the name. And I called them. And I said, can we meet?
Mm-hmm.
And then I told them what I want to do. And I said, I know this is not possible. And they said, Miri, forget about not possible. Tell us what you want, and we will make it to you.
Mm-hmm.
And it was amazing, guys, very creative. And they built the Origametria e-learning site.
Ah.
And still today.
Uh-huh.
And we build it and make it. And it's amazing, you know. I also train in Israel, math teacher. And part of the mark they get, they need to go to the Origametria site to teach the class and then write some comment about it. And one of the questions I asked them, what was missing in the e-learning site? And always I get the answer, nothing.
Oh, wow.
But now we work in, beside Origametria to develop the next generation of Origametria. And I built something new that I think the teacher doesn't know they need it, you know? When you give them something, they, so many things, maybe feature I do it now, when they will have it, they say, how I didn't have it before? You know, making something very smart. So I work on from 2012 until 2017. We built it up, me, Johnny, and Paul. 2017, the education ministry accepted as a part of the curriculum. And this is a big achievement to the origami world and to everybody, because it's mean, it's been accepted as a learning tool for the curriculum, not as an extra lesson as a for mathematics teacher. I trained, I don't know, over the years, I train every year, I train at least 800 or 900 teachers.
Wow.
And, in 2020, we have 150 schools. In 2021, we jumped to 600 schools because of the corona.
Oh.
We have 150,000 students who use it.
Wow. So this is online curriculum for teaching geometry with origami. Yes. And it's, is it required or is it optional? In the like, how do people find?
Yeah. Maths teacher can have many tools to teach geometry.
Right.
So we are one of the tools for the maths teacher.
Yeah.
But I can tell you there is a maths teacher who worked, the teacher who worked with us 1 year, they always renew that. Every year they need to make a new, renew that.
Right.
And they always, you know, 4 years they go year after year. And we always develop a new lesson.
Mm-hmm.
When we develop lesson, Johnny bring the geometry topics from the curriculum, and then me and Johnny sit and diagnose that, and then Paul participate, and Paul create as the model,
mm-hmm.
and build it up, and then Paul work with the animator to build the animation correctly. Then it's come to me and Johnny, and then me and Johnny work on it, and then I put it in the Origametria e-learning site and build all the lesson. And then we test it in the class to see that the lesson is working.
I see.
And then we release it to use. And we see that in geometry, you have to understand that geometry is a very complicated topic. The percentage of students around the world who succeed in geometry, it's 40%.
Wow. Yeah. So I love geometry, but
yeah, you do origami, that's why. The thing is, geometry was always difficult to math teacher to teach.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But many times the math teacher teach more the numbers, less the geometry.
Right.
But to get to higher education, you have to have the geometry.
Right.
Geometry is a very important topic.
Right.
And I think Origametna does it in a very, very beautiful way to the student. And that's what makes me going, because I have to tell you, it's a big success, but economically, it's not easy.
Mm-hmm.
You still look investor to invest in Origometria. And it's very hard because we do all of it from our saving and what we sell.
Yeah.
And it's difficult, but every time I hear the teacher and I hear the student, last week I talked to one of the math supervisor of education ministry. I didn't know her before. She's mm-hmm. very high up.
Mm-hmm.
And she for half an hour, she told me what she liked about Origometria and how she liked it.
Wow.
And she said, Miri, I know you. You don't know me. I was shocked. You know, I was holding the phone. I thought, usually I need to tell her that, not she need to tell me that.
Yeah, right. You're convincing. Yeah.
Yeah. What nice also about Origometria, that the curriculum in geometry, it's the same all over the world.
Right.
So we have it in the site in Arabic, in Hebrew, and in English.
Okay.
And now we develop the next generation in a different language. So the school can buy it in America, in Germany, in many, many countries. Can use it. So we build a system, make it very easy to use for other country.
Right. And is it starting to get purchased around the world?
I got a lot of requests from around the world, a lot. But yeah. I feel like I need to build the system right for them.
Right.
So for the moment, every time I get a request, I say, okay, when the next generation
keep your name.
Come, mm-hmm. they will get it and they say nothing missing. It's perfect.
Mm.
So, but yes, but we would like to sell it to a different country. And, you know, it's kind of a startup.
Right.
You know, many times I hear about talking about women as, you know, try to encourage women to do career and to do, you know, breaking the glass ceiling and all this. And I'm always smiling about it. And I say, I did it before you create the world of it.
Right.
But I never thought about it, you know. Now I think about it because everybody talk about it, you know.
Right. Well, on your websites, you say you're CEO. And I actually wondered if you had some business training because you present yourself. But you should. You are the CEO.
Okay,
and you're the...
I have a few hat. I'm an origami. First of all, before everything, I'm educator. So I work in education. I see myself as an educator.
Mm-hmm.
The second, I'm origami artist. This is my soul. I do origami exhibition. The art of origami, it's in my heart. And at the other hand is the CEO of the Origometria, but right. I also develop the Origometria. You know, I write the lesson, every lesson. I sit and write it. Whatever the teacher do in the class, I write it down. So I have many hats.
Yes.
Maybe I'm a bit hyperactive, you know, I have a lot of hats. But I think this is how I build, you know. I'm not interesting about, you know, sometimes when I talk to my friends, and I see what they interesting about. And I never understand why, you know, it doesn't look to me very, I'd like to do something who is developing, making, and my head is working on it all
mm-hmm,
the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my truly belief, people sometimes don't understand why I do so much and why I'm doing. And I do believe we come to this earth for a very short time. It's short.
Yeah.
And the time we come, we have to do the maximum we can. Because you don't understand how you're born when you know nothing. And when you die, you do so much, you know, so much, and then you're gone. So It's mean the short time you have here on the earth, you have to do something, the possible that you can give. Everybody can give something else. And I, you know, when you have a vision, the vision leads you.
Right.
I remember once I went to one of the school to talk about orgiometria. The principal looked at me and said, Miri, you come to me every year and you all the time try to convince me. Maybe you stop to convince because we accept that. You know, it's in a way that sometimes because I see the light before other people in this topic, you know.
Yes.
Like, I know what I want.
Right.
We just, me and Paul wrote now a new book soon coming out called Origami 4 Plus. And it's a lot of vision there about how you teach young age to teach origami, how you make children creative in early age. But many things I wrote in the book that I'm sure when it will come out, people say, oh, yeah, yeah, it can work, you know. So in a way, when you have vision to do something, you just do it, you know. So if anybody hears us and you have vision,
yeah,
you always need to do what you vision, what your heart tell you, and not listen to the voice outside. You know how many people tell me this is impossible?
Right, right.
You know how many times I heard it? Do you know how many times I heard no, an answer? Do you know how many times?
Oh, yeah, I do, because I've heard it too. And no just means find another way for you and me, right? You just find another way. Yeah, and your passion, I think, helps sell your idea too. You know, people see how passionate you are and how you believe. And yeah, so they believe that you will follow through, which you do, and it's wonderful. So I want to know, can you teach me a little origametria lesson? Okay. Just short, okay, though. So, short.
Okay, so I teach you, and the people who listen to the lesson, they can take square paper and try to make it.
Okay, great. Okay. So get a square paper if you're listening.
Yes. Yeah. So what you do, you fold one corner to the opposite corner. So if somebody have a paper, the paper have four corners, yeah?
Yeah.
So they fold two opposite to each other.
So you have a triangle. So,
you know, the geometry helps to teach origami better if you use geometry language. Yeah. And then you open that.
Okay.
Now I'm not going to show you. I'm going to tell you.
Okay.
Then I'll show you.
Okay.
You take the side of the paper and you fold it along to the diagonal of the paper. You have a diagonal in the middle of the paper. So you fold the side to the diagonal crease.
Okay.
Now, if you don't know what is diagonal, it'd be hard to fold.
Right,
yeah?
Right.
Sometimes I do it as a challenge to math teacher. I tell them, I teach you origami without showing you anything on the paper. You just need to listen to geometry language. Now, because English is my second language, so I ask excuse for everybody for my language that it's not. Okay, so if you know what is a diagonal, so you take the side of the square and you fold it to diagonal.
Okay.
Can you show me what you did?
Yeah, I hope I did it right.
That's what you did. Yes,
okay, exactly. Good.
Yeah. So now you fold the adjacent side of the paper to the diagonal, so you have a Dalton.
Okay, say that again.
The opposite side.
Oh, the opposite side.
The other side.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. But we call it a kind of adjacent side.
I'll post some pictures, listeners, so you can see what we're doing. But I basically have a kite now.
Exactly. So do you have a Dalton or kite, what you call it?
Right.
Okay, so now you have a kite. Now turn the paper to the other side.
Okay.
Now we fold the long side of the kite to the diagonal. Put all the long side of the kite to the diagonal line or diagonal crease.
Both sides?
Now we do the other side.
Okay, yep. Now I have a necktie.
Yeah. Okay. You see, you did it without I show you.
Right. Yeah, she's not showing me. She's just telling me.
Because,
right.
Yes, because you hear to the geometry language. Now, I ask you to take the cute angle to the right angle.
And ooh.
Okay, you need to know what is a cute angle.
A cute angle, I forget.
Angle less than 90, yeah? And okay. Right angle is a 90, yeah? Mm-hmm. So you fold the cute to the right angle.
I don't know where I'm starting, though. Like here?
Look at the cute. Where is the cute angle?
Like this?
Okay, this is a cute angle.
Oh, the tiny one.
The tiny one, it's a cute angle.
Yeah.
If you look at your work, the outside, then you have a shape of quadrilateral. Yeah.
Is that the right angle?
This side, we didn't turn it. So you have a cute angle, and then you have a right angle.
I can't see. Hold it up a little. Okay.
So acute angle to the right angle.
Oh, it is a right angle. I see. Got it.
Actually, even Matt's teacher doesn't recognize this one is a right angle.
Yeah, I didn't see it. Right.
Usually they recognize right angle when it's standing. You know, for them, this is a right angle.
Right,
When we turn it, they don't.
Yeah, okay.
When I do it to the Matt's teacher, they realize how much origami can be, because when the math teacher sometimes thinking, origamis cannot be a math, I do this trick to them. And then after that, everybody understand origami is geometry.
Right.
Okay. Now you have the cute angle, okay? Mm-hmm. And then you fold it to a small triangle, maybe a centimeter.
Okay. Like I'm making a head.
Yes.
Okay.
And then turn it to the other side.
Okay.
Now you have a pentagon, and the pentagon have two line, who's the long line, yeah?
Yeah.
So you fold the two long line to each other.
Okay.
Half.
Yeah.
Yay. Okay.
Yes. Now we want to separate the peak from the neck. So you hold the peak of the swarm and pull it up.
Right, like this.
And then you fold here, you also fold the neck from the tail, yeah? A bit, not too much.
Mm-hmm.
Then you got a swarm. Now, why I teach you that? Because I can talk geometry and you can fold it by hearing the geometry less language. Now, or I know the origami people have a word they use how to fold, you know, take it to the pocket, put it. So I prefer to not talk as a pocket or as a kind of a street language. I prefer to talk in a geometry language. The instruction need to be geometry. This was beautiful in origami. The origami has geometry inside it, kind of geometry fold inside the folding and the paper. So when you do the geometry with origami, it feels like natural. It's part of.
Yeah.
Sometime before we wrote the Origametria, I start to look in the textbook. How they did geometry?
Mm-hmm.
Every time they tell them to do some action, it's look like they push them to find or to do some cube to, but with origami, just naturally come inside.
Yeah. Wow. This has been fascinating, Mary. I want to talk a little bit to end up about your own artwork, because you make these book sculptures that involve origami. And they have to do with maybe what's between the covers, but also the similarities between people and peace. And tell me a little bit about your artwork.
Okay. Part of my problem that when origami become a hobby and I make it professional.
Mm-hmm.
So every time I do origami, I'm working.
Yeah.
When I was young, I did origami. It was relaxing.
Right.
So my art is leave the origami in my personal corner, not as a work. And so when I create art, is my expression.
Mm-hmm.
If you see my work and you hear what I think about all what I did in my life, you understand it's all eventually connected. So
yeah,
one of the artwork that everybody know, it's two book.
Mm-hmm.
One the Quran, one is the Torah.
Mm-hmm.
It's two holy book.
Right.
And I wanted to show that the people can be Muslim, can be Jewish, but they are the same.
Mm-hmm.
Because we born the same, we die the same.
Mm-hmm.
So what I did, I took the inside, of course, I hand bind the book.
Right.
I didn't use a real Quran and Torah because I don't want to hear the book. And the paper, it's plain paper. It's not text inside.
Okay.
Because people who believe, they believe the text is the word of God. So I didn't want to hurt it.
Mm-hmm.
So what I did a hand binding to the book and I designed it outside, look like a holy book.
Mm-hmm.
And then I fold and cut the paper to a figure, to people. Mm-hmm. And I put them together and I mix the people who are coming from the two books.
Mm-hmm.
So when you look at that, you don't know which one belongs to the Quran, which one belongs to the Torah. So when people saw, in the first time I put it in a museum here, and after it was an exhibition around the world, and people look at it and they love it. They love it because I think that's what people want.
Yeah.
They want to melt. They want to. And I like this work I did. I feel it's the way you have action is what you do with Israeli Palestinian. The other way, it's how you tell the world about it with art.
Mm-hmm.
So my art is my expression.
Mm-hmm.
The other work I don't know if you saw it, I did a big piece. I took a lot of newspaper in Arabic and Hebrew.
Oh, yeah.
I put them together, one side Hebrew, one side Arabic.
Mm-hmm.
And I fold them in a three dimension. So it's look like a big wall.
Right.
I remember I put it in a museum,
mm-hmm.
and sometime I stood next to them. So if you go to the museum, you see one side Arabic, one side Hebrew from the newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
so sometime I used to stand next to my work. People didn't know I did it yet.
Uh-huh.
So I hear what people say. Some people say, wow, it's so lovely to see the Arab and the Hebrew together. Some people say, this is a really war between Hebrew and Arabic.
Uh-huh.
So each one say what you think about this world.
Right.
According to his opinion.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So I was standing in the museum hours, just listening to what people say. They didn't know it's my work.
Yeah.
And it was very, very interesting. So... and then I did another work that I think it was traveling for 5 years in the 14 museum.
Yeah, I saw it. It was in Colorado.
Yeah.
That came to Colorado, to my state. Yeah.
Actually, I've been to opening of two of the exhibition.
Okay.
Maya did it. It's amazing exhibition. We have the Torah, you know, the Torah is the holy book of the Jewish.
Right.
Now, the Torah, it's a big book in the synagogue that they take it out of the coffin, you know, in the weekend, in Shabbat and all this.
Right.
So I want to say something to the Israeli, to the Jewish people, too, because you have the Torah and you have it's two roles that mm-hmm. going from one side to each other. But what I did is that two roles and the going for each other, I twist it.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I think also many of the Judaism, it twists by Jewish.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think this is another, you know, I have another hat, so don't talk about it. My volunteering work here.
Okay.
Another 5 hours, another activity I have.
Wow.
So what I do believe that the culture is important. With all what I say between culture and melting, I think that's important that you know your roots and you know your
yeah.
culture. I'm Jewish. Mm-hmm. I always stay Jewish, whatever happened, you know. Mm-hmm. It's mm-hmm. my roots, it's my grandmother heritage and all this. But it gets twisted in the last 30 years. Many Jews
yeah.
become fanatic. The original of Judaism is very, very open-minded.
Mm-hmm.
It's take care of the weakness in the society. It's amazing because
yes.
this is what I get from my grandmother, my grandfather. And suddenly I see people acting to the Judaism from the fanatic way. You're not right. allowed to do this, you're allowed to do this, and this is nonsense, this is not Judaism. So my work was first of all to the Jewish of the Torah, how the Jewish twist the Torah by themselves. Mm-hmm. And to other people who doesn't know, you know, I heard story from my grandmother, you know, my grandmother comes from Turkey. Mm-hmm. One side comes from Turkey, one side comes from Morocco. And I heard how they suffer because what the other people thought about them as a Jewish.
Right.
So it's also how people from outside twist the Judaism to think about Judaism, what the Judaism is not, because Judaism was always humanity religion.
Right.
So this was my expression as an artist. I don't do origami art as elephant or...
When I
do origami art, I want to express something. That's why I also did with the Quran. I bind the Quran paper and then I twist the paper because I think also the Quran original, it's different from what people try to make out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because
mm-hmm.
if you look at the Quran, you know, I know so many Muslims who believe in the Quran. That's so amazing people. And, you know, so if you are fanatic, if you take, you know, two people can read the same text.
Yeah.
And each one give you different translation,
right.
Translation according how they raise him and what they give him and his experience in life. So it's not what in the Quran, it's not what it's in the Torah, it's what people make out of that. And I think
right.
now when you see the word, you understand it even more.
Yeah.
So this kind of thing is very important to me.
Mm-hmm.
To tell people to stop when they come to the museum, look at the art, think about it, and rethink about their opinion and rethink about how they make things, you know, for the world, you know, for themselves.
Yeah. Well, Miri, this has been such a treat to get to know you a little better. I hope one day maybe we can meet in person. And we'll wrap up now, but thanks for coming on Paper Talk, and we'll put links to your artwork. I know there's a little video I saw, and to all of these organizations we've talked about. You don't have your own website, right? You have a Facebook page with Paul where you guys announce what you do.
And we have the Origometria site,
yes.
The Israeli Origami Center.
Yeah, I'll put all those. Yeah.
I think when I'm going to be 80, maybe I will make a site only about Miri. For the moment, it's not important.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much. It was really lovely. I enjoyed to talk to you and hear you as well.
Yeah, you
thank
too.
Thank you very much for inviting me and let me to talk.
Hey, paper friends. Did you know that I write a weekly blog called The Sunday Paper, featuring stories of people doing exciting, innovative, and beautiful things with paper? Sign up at helenhebertstudio.com/blog. I'm also creating a lot of content over here, and the best way to stay up to date is to join my newsletter list to learn about free tutorials, online classes, workshops, and the annual Redcliffe Paper Retreat, which takes place right here at Helen Hebert Studio. You can sign up at helenhebertstudio.com to receive my e-newsletter. This wraps up our episode, and if you enjoyed it, I'd appreciate it if you could leave a review over on iTunes. This helps other people find out about the podcast. Special thanks to Gary A. Hansen for the sound editing and Peter Thomas for the music. Visit helenhebertstudio.com and click on Paper Talk, where you can find out more about them. Subscribe to the series via iTunes and listen to other episodes and access all of the archived shows. I'll talk to you soon.